Welcome to the Compassion Fatigue Couch, where I offer quick tips, tricks, and tidbits for managing compassion fatigue in the animal welfare, animal rights, and animal caregiving fields. Plus, some longer bonus episodes featuring in-depth interviews with mental health and industry experts. I'm your host, Jen Blau, and I'm a licensed professional counselor and former shelter worker and animal control officer. I've taken my experience in the trenches combined with my expertise in psychology to help busy animal advocates like you with all things compassion fatigue, burnout, secondary traumatic stress, and overall mental health. Don't forget to subscribe to the show so you never miss a single episode. And for more compassion fatigue resources, visit CompassionFatigueCouch.com. Now on to the show. Now let's talk a little bit about some of the possible causes and risk factors for developing compassion fatigue. One of the things that we know that can be a risk factor for developing compassion fatigue is someone's personality or temperament. We do know that having high levels of empathy and compassion can definitely be risk factors. Now, there is a difference between empathy and compassion. So empathy is the ability to put yourself in someone else's shoes or paws, so to speak, where compassion is the desire to do something about it. It's basically empathy in action. Another common personality trait that is inherent in so many helping professions is the tendency to put others' needs ahead of our own needs. A lot of caregivers, we also view our work as more of a calling than a career. We can definitely be more at risk for developing compassion fatigue if our self-esteem or sense of worth is tied directly to our job. And finally, some of us are just more sensitive. There's a fairly new concept called the highly sensitive personality, but just know that being more sensitive can put you more at risk of developing compassion fatigue. Another risk factor includes being exposed to or having a history of trauma. So there's a few different types of trauma that I'd like to talk about with you. The first is called primary trauma. This is something that is generally life-threatening that happens directly to you. This might include childhood abuse or neglect, a sexual assault, being involved in a natural disaster, a car accident, a head injury, something that directly impacts you and threatens your life. Secondary or vicarious trauma is experiencing a trauma that happens to someone else, in this case, animals. So, for example, being exposed to animal abuse or neglect or euthanasia are all examples of secondary or vicarious traumas. Now, what's really interesting is the symptomology is the same in both primary and secondary trauma. Compassion fatigue really is comparable to PTSD. And you might have noticed a lot of the symptoms that we talked about are the same symptoms of PTSD. Now, is it possible to have compassion fatigue and PTSD? And the answer is yes. Now, if you think that you might be struggling with PTSD, I highly encourage you to reach out to a mental health professional, but also know that we will be covering more about PTSD and trauma in upcoming podcasts. Secondary traumatic stress has been described as the slow accumulation of what we call little T's or little traumas to the point where they start to become symptomatic, which basically means developing symptoms. And again, the symptomology is the same with both primary and secondary trauma. So it's really important not to dismiss secondary trauma involved in this line of work. The other component of compassion fatigue and another risk factor for developing it is occupational burnout. Now, the difference is that burnout has more to do with your interaction with your environment. So, for example, if you work in a very toxic environment, so there's a lot of drama or gossip or stabbing each other in the back, throwing each other under the bus, things like that, that can definitely be a perfect recipe for developing burnout. So we'll dive deeper into burnout in a future episode, but just know that there are basically three main dimensions to burnout. The first is emotional exhaustion. The second is depersonalization, and that's where we tend to view people as almost non-human. And finally, we have a reduced sense of personal accomplishment. So here's a fun fact for you. When someone is exposed to secondary trauma, they become less resilient against developing burnout. And when they're burned out, they're less resilient to the effects of secondary trauma. So that's why it is so important and why I'm going to be stressing building resiliency throughout this podcast. Viktor Frankl was a Holocaust survivor and author of the book Man's Search for Meaning, which recounts his experiences of the Nazi death camps that claimed the lives of his family. Frankl once said, "What is to give light must endure burning." He argued that while we can't avoid suffering, we can find ways to cope with it, move on from it, and ultimately find meaning. If there's one other thing that you take away from this podcast, is that there is a difference between pain and suffering. The reality is your work will be painful at times, but that doesn't mean you have to suffer. I can't offer you a cure for compassion fatigue. There is going to be pain. But what I can offer you is the opportunity to find coping skills, to move on from it, and to find meaning. While there is a great deal of secondary traumatic stress inherent in animal protection work, how we are able to cope with it, move on from it, and find meaning depends on our reaction. When confronted with danger, either real or perceived, the body goes into a state of fight or flight, designed to protect us. This involves physiological changes, including muscle tension, racing thoughts, increased heart rate, rapid shallow breathing. The problem is that the fight or flight system was really only designed to be engaged for short bursts of time. But sometimes when we work in highly stressful environments, the system can almost become stuck or constantly engaged. How we react to, say, a customer yelling at us or witnessing animal abuse is somewhat dependent on our past experiences. Now, while that customer berating us or bearing witness to an animal's trauma is no doubt painful, the reality is we are actually not in danger, and so the fight or flight system being engaged is actually not serving us. In fact, it can end up harming us. When the fight or flight system stays on for too long, it can lead to health problems such as increased risk for anxiety, depression, and even heart disease. Professional maturation is the ability to reduce that perceived threat response and can really make all the difference in whether or not your career with animals will be sustainable or lead to burnout. Just as the body has a built-in alarm system for protecting us from danger, we also have the ability to turn that alarm off or trigger a relaxation response. The body scan, for example, can be used anytime, anywhere. You simply close your eyes and do a mental scan from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet, and simply notice, as you go down the body, are any of my muscles tense or tight? If so, simply allow them to soften. Again, unless you are in real danger, there's no reasons for your muscles to be tense. Consciously making an effort to keep your muscles soften will help to keep you self-regulated. Slow, deep breathing, meditation, massage, practicing mindfulness or yoga, simple stretching, guided imagery or meditation, or progressive muscle relaxation are all great examples of mind-body techniques to keep you relaxed and self-regulated throughout your day. Having a regular, ongoing self-care routine is crucial for managing compassion fatigue. Now, it's important that self-care is not viewed as a luxury or an indulgence as much as it's a necessity or non-negotiable, just like brushing your teeth. Self-care is what helps us to build resiliency. It helps us to relax and recharge. We wouldn't expect our cars to go without gas or an electric charge, so why should we expect the same from our bodies? Some examples of self-care could include regular exercise. It's actually the number one thing we can do to help reduce anxiety, depression, and stress. Good nutrition also plays a vital role in our mood. Healthy sleep habits, setting boundaries, creative expressions such as music or art, outdoor recreation, having hobbies outside of animal care. Having a religious or spiritual practice can sometimes help us to stay grounded, and professional development throughout our career can help us stay confident and engaged in our work. So I hope that that has given you just a few ideas, a jumping off point on how to manage compassion fatigue. Now, of course, we'll be talking about a lot more strategies coming up in future shows, but for now, I just want you to focus on a little bit of self-care. Pick something, whether it's exercise or trying to get more sleep or just to eat a little bit healthier, and see if that makes a difference for you. This podcast is not meant to provide medical advice or substitute for psychological care. Please consult with a mental health professional if you feel that you may be suffering from depression, anxiety, or PTSD. If you are feeling suicidal, go to your nearest emergency room or contact 911.